Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the TOVG podcast. We have our usual George Weedman, Jimmy Belikoff, and Matt Visual in here, along with a recurring guest you may know and remember. We have Forrest Lee, a.k.a. First, writer and editor for Game Theory and Digino Gaming in here, who has just now started a new retrospective mini-documentary series of his own. How are you doing,
I'm great,
gentlemen,
man.
And gentlemen?
I'm doing good.
That's good. That's good. That's a good thing to be doing.
Aside from the fact that it's literally 1,200 degrees Celsius outside my apartment right now, I'm doing okay.
Are we yeah. All? I think all three of us actually are in places where we should be rocking the full fan.
Yeah.
I had to turn everything off for this recording, though.
Yep. So. I cranked my AC super hard for about 20 minutes before. And I got my apartment down to 81 degrees right now, so...
Oh, congratulations, wow. That's so low.
Really basking in the cool breeze right now.
My AC broke.
That's only...
And I'm on the second floor, so...
Oh, boy.
It's good, uh-oh. I mean, I have the fan right on me, man. It is touching me, okay?
So wait, how does it work? Does cool air rise or fall?
Rise. Heat. Rises, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, no. So actually, you're in the hotter of the two stories.
Yes.
But you
really
have fans.
Hot. Like, you can feel it walking up the stairs. It's great.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Ooh. Yeah.
Mm. Also, like, I probably don't have it nearly as bad as you because my AC was working. And, like, I have all the shades closed. But for some reason, one of the windows in the room that I'm currently in, the shades... are just the same as every other shades, but for some reason that window lets in so much more heat. Just for like the little hallway between this room and like or my living room, you walk through that like 5 foot span and you feel like a noticeable temperature change just
you,
right
you
there.
Think maybe the like window ceiling or insulation is like starting to peel?
I think it's all to do with the sun position on it because all this stuff is renovated recently, so.
That sucks.
Like, yeah, it's just weird that it's like that one spot. I have another bigger window literally right next to me and it doesn't get hot.
So
but...
here on the TOVG podcast, we like right. to talk about weather and home improvement.
Yeah,
wow, I just spilled coffee all over myself.
Oh no, I hope it was cold coffee.
Go wash that right
it
now.
It was lukewarm. No, I gotta keep us going. So, well, we have Forrest in here for the first time in a few weeks. So you're on here occasionally.
Yeah.
But you started a new video series that I assume is going to become a series of little like retrospective mini documentaries. The first one being about the Red and Blue editions of Pokemon. Little history
indeed.
Lesson.
Yeah.
So what else? What have you been up to this week that might have like contributed towards this thing? Basically, did you play a lot of Pokemon this week?
No, actually, I wrote that all the way back in February.
Really? You've been sitting on it that long?
Yeah, it's a whole long story that I'll tell you later. but like, no, the short answer is no. I got my friend, aka Slave Boy, to record all that footage. That was nice.
Well, now we're learning all sorts of interesting things about your
behind the scenes,
your workflow, quote unquote workflow.
I spent this week playing Hearthstone.
Ooh.
That's what I did.
I think I saw you tweeting a little bit about that, which was confirmation of my fears of getting into Hearthstone anytime other than the first week that it was released.
Hearthstone,
pretty
the
much.
Pokemon of the 2010s.
It's so bad getting into it now because I don't want to spend hundreds of dollars to catch up.
Yeah.
So I'm playing with these shitty pre-made decks, and people are dropping out, like, these amazing cards, like, turn three, that I have nothing to counter.
Yeah. I feel like it's a lot like playing Magic the Gathering if you just buy a pre-made deck, and you don't, like, take the time to buy, like, a shit ton of booster packs. It's just like... Well, let's see, turn four, I have two mana now, feeling pretty good, and then they're like, so I'm just going to bring out this 7/7 who also has trample and fear, and if you play a monster, he eats them and gets 3/3. And you're like, I can't.
He's just building character for you.
Right. This one guy I played against, like, brought out this beast, I forget its name, but like every time it takes damage, it doubles its attack.
Good.
And it starts out with like 7, and you only have 30 health.
Yep.
So like within like 3 turns, it'll kill you.
Yeah, and I'm sure they. I just assuming I know the mechanics of Hearthstone. I'm assuming they do a thing where they put like shitty monsters out to attack it on their side, so they double it, or something like that.
No, like you can't like attack your own monsters, but there are spells that you can. Like damage your own stuff with.
Right.
Like mages just have like this ability they can use any time that damages anything. Only one. Like only one health.
Yeah.
So like that's perfect with that.
Yep.
Wait, their attack only damages for one health.
Mages have like a special ability that only damages for one health.
Is that just like, to like if you need some strategic reason to like eat a turn?
Well, I mean
It's only like 2 mana, so it's like not a big investment.
Yeah, it's generally I would assume that's used for stuff like I have enough guys to attack this stupid thing that is like a 10/10 or whatever the fuck to get it down to 1, but I can't kill it with all my monsters, so I'll just burn 2 mana to do this 1 damage and ensure the kill.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. It's a utility spell, essentially. It does damage, but it's like...
Welcome to the TOVG podcast with Advanced Hearthstone Strats.
Yeah. Advanced Hearthstone Strats, meaning I never want to play that game.
I'm sorry I can't jump in, because I've never, ever played any Hearthstone at all.
George.
Nah,
the silence.
Fine.
The fucking silence.
I mean, I didn't know what to reply. It's pretty clear that I haven't either.
What? No, you were, like, talking with him, and I couldn't
think of anything.
I'm just
going off the knowledge of, like, CCGs in general. Like,
well, that's, like, another thing I'm like, disabled with. I've never played, I don't know, like, I think the last time I actually tried was when Pokemon was popular. It was the 5th grade.
Let's all be honest. Any of us who played Pokemon cards when we were younger didn't play the game.
Rarely.
No. They decided to build this incredibly complex like game out of cards that like 5-year-olds would buy.
Oh yeah, it was
like why?
Yeah, it's pretty complex. I started playing TCG online, Pokemon TCG online a few months back for some Dex related stuff. And it's actually not too complicated, but at the same time, this is coming from the Jimmy who has beaten Braid, Anti-Chamber, Fez, like, fucking, like, I've gone through some shit in video games, so now I can fucking, like, figure stuff out, but the Jimmy at the time, yeah, that prize cards, fucking energy costs and retreat costs.
Oh, yeah, you had energy cards.
Yeah,
that
was a lot
of
stuff to learn.
They were, like, the bulk of the deck.
You guys battled back in the day with Pokemon cards?
I tried.
I did the thing where me and my friends were, like, sat down with our handful of mismatched cards and, like, pretended to know what we were doing, but nobody actually, like, played the game and understood.
Battling with Pokemon cards was less about battling and winning as much as it was about just, like, rubbing your collection in their face and saying, I have cooler cards than you.
My friends and I just played Yu-Gi-Oh, but with Pokemon cards.
That's what... I played actual Yu-Gi-Oh cards when I was younger. That was the only thing I actually
Same.
Played.
Oh my god,
played.
That's hilarious. It's just like, I guess the demos didn't match up. Like, whoever designed the game forgot that, like, it was Babbies playing with them.
Yeah,
yeah, you know what? That kind of... Those are kind of flip-flopped, because Pokemon is an incredibly complex and interesting game, the cards, I mean. But the demographic is generally, like, young kids. Whereas Yu-Gi-Oh, if you, like, fucking look at all the art and the cards and what they are, it's, like, morbid, like gross and grimdark stuff, and yet the game is, like,
It's like Magic, but anime. Like,
It's, but like the game is much more simpler than Magic.
Yeah.
It's like messier. It's not like a solid game. It's much messier, but like it's so simple. It's like, you know, this monster has attack and defense points and you like put him out. It's like that's like the game, and you do your stupid trap card bullshit and then
it's amazing that as complicated as the games got, they still managed to like be perfect for kids.
Yeah, I mean,
it's those cartoons,
I don't know what you're talking
man.
About with Pokemon, because I don't know a single kid who played the Pokemon TCG when they were younger.
Well, I mean, the Game Boy games.
Oh, the Game Boy games, yeah. But, like, I'm talking about the card games. Like, yeah. They had no, like, nobody had any clue what they were doing.
We tried, though. I don't know about you guys, but I tried on, like, at least three separate occasions where, like, a relative would come over and we'd try and just give up and play Smash Brothers instead.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. Yeah.
So, Matt, what have you been up to?
Okay. Well, I played through Uncharted 3 because I totally missed Uncharted 3.
Waiting for the remaster.
I didn't know there was a remaster coming out.
They're doing the trilogy.
Jeez, everybody's doing a remaster. Not to say I don't want it, because it. Looking at Uncharted 3, I was like, man, this was good graphics back in the day. This kind of looks kind of a little dated, you know? Like,
really?
I don't really look. Yeah, it's not that it's dated. It's more because it's shaggy, you know. And I guess, you know, playing on a much smaller TV might be a little bit better for that. But like, so it looks better on my little 720 TV.
You mean the resolution?
Yeah, I stretch it out of, you know, on my humongous, like, well, it's not huge, but like it's a 1080p screen, and it's, you could see the jaggies, and I'm like, I like it on my 3DS. You know, I don't want it anywhere else. You know, not when I'm playing.
I absolutely hate how when you upgrade a TV, you end up downgrading many other experiences that were on it before. Like that happened last gen when. Your SD games all of a sudden look awful on an HD TV screen, and the effect is less pronounced when you're going from 720 to 1080, but it's still like there. It is blurrier than it was before.
Yeah.
You know, just to be fair to Uncharted, that game came out in 2011.
Yeah,
also,
for sure.
I'm skipping through screenshots. It still looks good.
it's really distracting. It distracted me, but it didn't take away from me enjoying it, and I haven't met anybody else who likes Uncharted, but I guess I'm like the only one in my group of friends that's like Uncharted. I like Uncharted. Uncharted is a simple game where you're on a ride, okay? You're on a ride.
You press forward and the movie happens.
And different interesting things, they like animate different things to happen while you're playing the game. Like, you know, when you see in the trailer where he knocks someone over and their gun floats in the air and you grab and you start shooting with it, like that type of stuff was happening already in other games. And that's basically the whole game, where little bits and pieces of that unique gameplay pops up and you just kind of roll with it. You're like, oh, okay, this happened. Oh, I punched him outside of the window. But you'll like never see that again. And that's but that's basically the game, and that's what they probably spend all their time on, is those little unique little, if you punch him over here, he might do this. If you punch him over here, you might flush his head in the toilet. Like, it's, you know, those little things. And you're just on this rail of crazy it's cartoony how crazy the action gets.
Yeah, I mean, like it seems like you guys ever watched the movie Savannah, I think it was called?
Yeah, with Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, with Matthew McConaughey. It seems
That is a really good description of Uncharted, actually.
It just seems like that in game form. Like, it's like pretty much standard, like Indiana Jones-esque like idea, and then there's a whole bunch of like crazy set pieces that happen.
He's basically Nathan Fillion as well. Like, the story goes the same way as well from Firefly. It's ridiculous. But I go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I was gonna.
I was about to change because the second game I was playing was Fallout 1. But go ahead. What you were gonna say?
Yeah, my only problem with like the Uncharted series are like they have these sections where the difficulty just increases so much, like so dramatically, only for this one section. Like, I remember I played all these games with my friends back when I was in high school, and there would be sections that would take us hours to get past because, like, they just decided to throw 30 enemies at you in a room.
That is the worst part of Uncharted. It's not only that the enemies, there's so many of them, it's that the fact they're so spongy. Like, they don't die from head. Like, if you shoot them in the head,
that's a real
they don't
problem
die.
With, like, a lot of, like, basic regenerating health cover shooter style games. Like, all of a sudden, there will be one part of all the battles that just, like, feels like it was not delicately managed or playtested at all compared to the others. I have horrible memories of that scene in Spec Ops where you wake up from some crazy hallucination with just a deagle and you do that. Like, I've retried like three parts of that game like 20 times, whereas the rest of the whole game was just a smooth, solid ride.
That was really the thing that put me off from Halo 4 when I was playing it, because I beat all the other Halos on Legendary, you know, several times, single player and multiplayer. And so I was like, you know what, Halo 4, I'm just going to do it Legendary. Like, why not just jump in to the difficult game comfortable with? Yeah. And then, like, like maybe three or four levels into the game, you start meeting the Prometheans, I think they're called. And the fucking, like, they have, like, the fodder enemies, but then the, like, the elites, essentially the Prometheans version of the elite, like, the other guys who have guns and have, like human-esque AI, they're just, like, fucking drains for your bullets. Like, you just shoot it and all your bullets just, like, get drained out into nowhere and do nothing. Like, literally you have to waste, like, three or four clips of, like, powerful guns to take them down.
And that's, like, not fair.
No, it's just,
I mean,
agonizing.
That is hard. You got what you signed up for, but it's also not interesting or fair.
Yeah, Grand Theft Auto 5 does that too, like in the heists.
Oh, yeah?
It's ridiculous how much some enemies take, but yeah.
Yeah, I died a few times this weekend with that as well. Grand Theft Auto 5, yeah. Oh my gosh. We died multiple times on the heist, and then we had one random will always leave. But on Halo 4, me and my friend go through Legendary every single time a Halo comes out, and we run into those same issues where it's just like, okay, all right, we're just going to have to stand back in this corner. Like, this is not fun, because we played through Halo 1 like this, and it's just like, you know, it felt like... If you aimed at their head, you could defeat those the elites really quickly, and the shield would pop off. Yeah.
Or like, even elites that were fully shielded, like, you could just corner them and spam them if they had no cover, and they'd be fine. Like, the super-duper big armored ones had a little weak spot on their back. Like, you always had a way out.
Yeah, but, like, there was so much push and pull with that. Like, those are the hunters, and they made them harder in the later games. Like, in Halo 2 and 3, they weren't as, like, easy as 1. Because in Halo 1, you get one good shot with a pistol on their back, and they go down, which is really weird. But, like, yeah, like, the elites were, like, the perfect enemy for Halo, where, like, you hit them in the head enough, and their shield pops early, and you could, like, bum rush them from there. And even on Legendary, you'll, like, if their shield pops, then, like, you've done the hard part. Now you go in and confirm the kill. But, like, Prometheans didn't have that shit. You just sponge in an entire shotgun clip and then pray that they don't shoot you more before you reload.
I guess it's just easy to make an enemy that is, like, quote unquote, well, yeah, I was going to put hard in quotation marks, but no, it's just, like, easy to make a hard enemy that just has high numbers attached to it rather than hard strategies attached to it.
Yeah, and I think it wouldn't have been so much of an issue, but there's no, like, rotation to, like, the things that they do. They just shoot you infinitely, and they can move really fast, so they can back out of the range of any of your weapons that do decent damage. And they had some bullshit where it was, like, they don't get as much damage by plasma weapons, so you have to use bullets, but bullets are, like, all you have is, like, the spread weapons, and then they run away, and so it's like, okay, so what you're saying is use the least effective thing possible, and they can outrun me. This is good. I enjoy this.
It's not fun. The Uncharted thing, you put it on easy. You know, if you don't care about achievements, then just put it on easy.
And then you really just hold
it
forward.
It ruins
and let
the experience
movie play.
As well. Yeah. That annoyed me because Uncharted 2, I felt like it was a little bit better with that, but Uncharted 3 was just. I don't know, too spongy. But halfway through the game, I was like, okay, what's going on here? I'm shooting them in the head, and they're just like, oh, that felt good. And
that tickled.
No. Yeah.
You're tickling them.
Yeah.
I've been scrolling through screenshots this whole time, and I don't know what you're talking about, Matt. This game looks really good when it's not, like, blown up on a giant TV, I guess.
Of course.
These sand dunes, man. These sand dunes. I can't wait to play it and see these sand dunes. I mean, I'll just hold down forward and let the movie play, but I mean, you'll have some great sand dune tech to look at while you do it.
There's actually a part of that game where I didn't realize a cutscene had ended.
It's a super
cinematic part. They were trying to do the whole Lawrence of Arabia thing, but I was like, oh, I'm playing. better hold forward.
I think I know what you're talking about too. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay.
It's he like right scratching his head in the desert.
Yeah.
That happened. There's like only two separate degrees of separation between you and people who like have to put on the E3 presentation because they didn't know either.
Oh gosh, and that's why I think. Yeah, go ahead.
I heard the story behind that was like their controller just broke.
Yeah,
and they were like, no.
Yeah, it was just it was a controller problem at like last second.
That's going to be a funny story in the future, though.
That's why I kind of stand by like the Uncharted 4 gameplay. I feel like if it was, I don't know if it was done live, I don't know, but if it was, I think like the way they do their design for the game, I feel like that the way it was shown is probably what could happen when you're playing the game because of the way they make the Uncharted games and how they just kind of, that's just what they do. Like what are they doing? Why are they taking so much time, so many years to make a game if all it is just a big damn movie? Like all those things is the full experience is the game, is you just on this path and making it feel like you're making choices through your gameplay.
Gotta account for a movie that looks good from any angle, that still looks good no matter what stupid things the director's trying to screw up along the way. It's a lot more complicated. I guess like a lot more demanding.
So
Jimmy, what have you been up to?
I was just gonna comment on the Uncharted 4 demo when it like just popped in my head what that demo reminded me of. Now in hindsight, I couldn't put my finger on it at the time when I was watching. You know the part where they get in the car and they're going down the hill and that armored car is like chasing them?
They
keep like taking a different path and the armored car like cuts them off again and you're like, okay, and they do that like 14 times in a row. Have you guys seen the second Hobbit movie?
Yes.
Okay, I'm the only one.
All right, well, to everybody but George, you remember the part where Bomber is in a barrel and he's rolling down the sides of the river?
Right.
When everyone is in the barrels and he's just like, he's like knocking over orcs in his barrel by accident, but it goes on for 2 minutes straight?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what I feel.
Uncharted for a Hobbit's End.
Oh gosh.
Not that it's necessarily a bad thing. I think that part dragged way too long and the joke stopped being funny very quickly, but that's what like it reminded me of is
that was originally the middle of the movie, so they had to like span that out to make it into an end. But yeah, did you know? There you go.
Did you know? Oh gosh.
The fucking burnt out ass did you know? So done with trivia.
Jimmy, what have you been up to?
Let's see. I played some Smash the other night for the first time in a while.
Yay. Did you check out the new characters?
I played against them. I did. Oh, you know what? I did play as Ryu once.
Yay. So cool. How is he?
It's pretty cool. I like his novelty mechanics, which if you don't know what they are, he can use his B, his side B, and his up B as Hadouken, Tatsumaki, and Shoryuken, or he can input the Street Fighter inputs using the A button. So you can do like quarter circle forward plus A, and you'll do a Hadouken quarter circle, or the Z punch and A, and you'll do a Shoryuken. It's like
does those with like much simpler side Bs.
Yeah, if you want to use the
more complicated inputs are more powerful.
Yeah, you can change the...
Okay, never mind. That makes sense. I was like, why did they just copy-paste the same move on two different inputs?
Because no, you can like, do, like,
if you get
a
bonus from the harder one, then yeah, that makes... I gotcha.
Yeah, and so he's pretty cool. Like, a lot of his stuff feels like a good representation of Street Fighter mechanics put into Smash.
Which is weird, because like, Smash is like the antithesis of... Yeah. Any normal fighting game.
Yeah,
based
it's just
on
like
Street Fighter.
Like they transferred him in very smoothly. He doesn't feel out of place. He feels like a Smash Brothers character. So that's cool.
It was well done.
I didn't get to play anybody else. I played against Lucas and Roy. And that was like, you know, just played against them, whatever, big deal. My puff is pretty on point though. I didn't lose my touch. I'm still pretty good with the jigs.
Oh really? Oh yeah. Well, that means I'm gonna have to keep practicing because SGC is happening in 2 weeks.
We're we're already planning. Me and Austin are already planning like a big tournament.
Is there an official Smash tournament there?
There will be in our room.
Yeah, we will have one. So
well, just because I'm saying because like last year there was plenty of tournaments. There was Street Fighter 4 or at Third Strike. A couple other fighting games, Killer Instinct, I think they had. So, I mean, if there's an official Smash 4 tournament, I would like to be in that.
Yeah, I got to get in the trenches for 2 weeks now. I got my adapter. I'm ready to go. So.
Shit. I'm so ready.
Smash you all. I'm smashing you all.
Speaking of SGC real quick before we move on to other games, the schedule came out, and I'm pretty happy with how it's looking. Did you guys get a chance to check it out?
Yeah, I saw that.
What's
too.
Going on?
I'm really happy they haven't stacked any like panels this time.
Yeah.
Like last time, the one that I remember specifically because I was so upset was they scheduled Team 4-Star, Hidden Block, and the Dex all at the same time.
Yes, I remember that because I was the Dex, and I had to compete with fucking Team 4-Star, and literally an equally sized Pokemon channel is part of Hidden Block, so like, like the Dex panel would not bad, all things considered. But like, I feel like we would have gotten a much bigger turnout had we not been scheduled against like two really clashing guys. Yeah. The only things that overlap as far as panels go are panels and the signings. Mm-hmm. So like, it still kind of sucks for both the Dex and Completionist this year, because the Dex is sandwiched between Digino Gaming and Peanut Butter Gamer. No, Digino Gaming and Pro Jared. Or one of those. I don't remember
really,
which one.
Digino Gaming is like the first one in the morning on Saturday.
Yeah, and then the Dex, and then I forgot who it is. I think it's Peanut
Butter
Gamer.
Oh, yeah, because you were like, you have to leave the Digino Gaming panel early.
Right, because I'm going to have to be setting up. But like, it's cool that there is no actual overlap to where like if you run after you get out of a panel you can get to the next one and you could just go through all the panels if you want, which is kind of neat. But I'm really hyped for SGC and a possible Smash tournament. I really don't think I've played any other video games this week. I played WoW for like 10 minutes.
Oh,
that's okay. I mean, Smash is like still relevant.
What is
not
Smash?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, are we talking about WoW now?
I played Terraria.
Yeah. Oh, first time. A big update.
Yeah, they had a huge update.
You can mount
so
your
like,
friends now.
Yep.
So like a few friends and I like jumped in. We played for a few hours.
See,
it was a lot of fun. I'd never played it before.
You played on
you never
hardcore,
played Terraria,
right?
Ever?
No, there was like the first. The only like experience I had was Terraria hardcore.
Uh-huh.
On Peanut Butter Gamer's gameplay thing.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I wish I had known, because I always need an excuse to get back into Terraria. I have fond memories from it a couple years ago.
Same. I remember essentially just around the time that Redigit stopped updating Terraria originally and said he was done with the game and he was never going to update it again. It was over and finished. Me and my friends picked it up in like a 4-pack and we played a good 70 hours on like a team, like a co-op server, and like we did all the bosses and we like beat the wall of flesh and everything, and it was like a huge cool thing that we did. And then we just ended there. And then like 6 months later, Redigit was like, alright, I'm back, I'm updating.
So what's happening with Starbound now?
I don't fucking know.
I haven't heard anything from
it. It's getting a little confusing.
All that I know is that I have not played since Redigit's first big update back on Terraria. and I know that there's a whole bunch of new things, and now there's another big update, and it's like, I'm getting to that point. Terraria and Minecraft are very similar in this regard, where I could just like wait 5 to 6 months, play the game again, and it will be an entirely different experience because of all of the shit that they've added since I last
it's
played.
It's a good feeling.
Yeah. It's kind of that infinite value of those really open sandbox games, so, especially ones that keep getting updated.
For free.
Forrest, I don't know if you've done this before, but it's like super duper fun to just like get a laptop you don't care about, leave it in the corner of your room, open a server on it, and then just close the window and give all of your friends the server address and like keep a persistent world with your buddies that's drastically like different every time you log in and see them again.
Yeah. That's what me and my friends were doing.
Like Jeff opened up a server. Ugh. And like it's great. We have a little house. I could probably get you in on that, like it's whatever.
Yeah, I'm interested. I mean, I don't know if I have time to, but I would be so down to play Terraria with you guys.
That's the beauty, though.
It's not my server, I'll ask, but like...
Oh, no, like, that's the beauty of having an open server like that, is as long as not enough or not too many drastic things happen when you're gone, you can just log on and go on your own little, like, spelunking quest down into a random cave, get a magic boomerang and some rocks, and build a little bit more of your house, and like... That could be your fun on Terraria, your 20 minutes or whatever
you
have.
It also fosters a feeling of community.
Yes.
Because you go down on your Spelunky quest, you end up with a bunch of extra bullshit you don't want, so you put it in the community chest for everyone else.
It's really...
Well, I don't know if you guys did that or not, but my server had rules, goddammit. Yeah, we were a society.
No,
yeah, we had a chest, like, room,
uh-huh.
Where we had our very important chest. And are not very important chests.
And the golden chests.
And the golden chests and the black chests.
Yeah.
I specifically remember at the end of the server that me and my friends had made, we finally, like, we beat enough of the game to where we just wanted to, like, start building crazy stuff. And we figured out how to use, like, wires and, like, pressure pads and everything. And in the last hurrah of the server, I wired... the entire, like, set of houses that we built, our entire, like, mini town and everything, to blow up with explosives. Like, enough explosives to set the entire thing into just never will it exist ever again. Everything's gone. And we had this one friend who we would always fuck with by taking his torches out of his house. And so we took the torches out of his house and we put the pressure pad right where the torch would be. And so, we all just waited around until he logged on. He's like, oh, fuck you guys. And then he walks down into his house and steps on the pressure pad and the server crashed.
The server crashed?
Oh, gosh.
There was too much TNT for the server to handle. So it just died. And our friend had to reboot it. And we came back on and there was literally like a 1x1 square where he was standing. And the rest of it was just like a gaping hole. Like,
good times.
Yeah.
Why didn't it blow up the square where he was standing?
I don't know. Something to do with how the server crashed, I'm assuming. But it was just like the greatest way to send off our server after we like finished all of the tasks was just like, you know, like
blow it up.
V for Vendetta style.
Wow. So very quickly before we break for commercial, I just want to say that I'm still working on my Witcher stuff. There's no way I can do these one a week. But I'm halfway through the second book now. And I gotta say, I'm having a whole lot more fun with this second Witcher book than I was with the first. Because, I mean, the first one wasn't bad. It was like, like a good 7 out of 10. But I also did not see, like, a lot of the appeal that people who were reading it in their native language would have noticed. Like, when I was done, I was reading a whole bunch of comments and reviews of it. And it's, like, amazing how many things that you miss. Like, there are jokes in here about... like silly Soviet propaganda slogans that no one would know unless they lived during that time and like recognized it from all the posters that were everywhere.
Right.
There are some like little sayings, some quips, some truisms that aren't just like copy pasted into the book, but rather kind of poked at by the situations that the characters are in.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like really solid, good wordplay that you would not have been able to translate over into English. I'm gonna see if I can look up one now. There's something about a saying where Polish people say, where the devil says good night is a Polish saying that refers to a place that's in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this story in the first Witcher book that takes place in a village that they nicknamed the Edge of the World because it's right next to a huge range of mountains that have just like unclaimed no man's land beyond it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little character who they refer to as a devil because he's this little goat looking creature.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends the story by saying good night. And see, that's like poking fun at this saying that they're in the middle of nowhere and there's just like one more joke about what a like nowhere podunk town they have to spend this story in.
Right.
But you wouldn't notice that unless you were familiar with the Polish saying that where the devil says goodnight is some middle of nowhere stupid place to be.
That's fucking... It's like multiculturally...
It's really clever. And there's... It's like so obvious that you would not be able to appreciate that if you did not grow up speaking the language and getting these sayings and aphorisms
right.
Implanted on you. But the second book, actually, I'm enjoying it a lot more, and I don't know if it's because it's a better translation or if because the book just has less to lose in translation. But this time... It's really kind of amazing seeing how much more of an actual legit character Geralt seems like. And I'm really interested to see if his video game version develops as the series goes on, which I guess Matt would know all about because he's gone through all three games now, and I'm just now getting ready to begin two. And in the games, Geralt is emotionless and stoic, partially for the sake of role-playing and partially to keep it easier on the writers, because they just kind of like pulled this amnesia subplot out of their buttholes for the sake of the games. But there's this really cool thing going on in the second book where a band of characters named the Crimson Reavers show up.
Mm-hmm.
And in the very beginning of The Witcher 2, you find the Crimson Reavers and they're like, "Oh, Geralt, we remember you." And then one of them like pokes another with his shoulder and says, "Shut up, we don't want him to remember." In the book, the Crimson Reavers are a huge pile of shit. They're these terrible people who like betray our character and go messing with his woman. It's horrible. But anyways, you wouldn't know that if you hadn't read the book.
Mm-hmm.
So in the game, they give you some choices that you can play around with these characters with, where someone who did not know what these characters did in the book might take sympathy on them and help them out, or someone who did read the book and knows what terrible people these Crimson Reavers are might be able to have an opportunity to like take their petty revenge on them, because in the games the Geralt is amnesiatic. Is that a word? He has amnesia. He doesn't remember what these characters did in the book continuity.
Right.
So it's like kind of up to the player to interpret how they should deal with the memories of these characters they might not even have memories of, which is thematically relevant because in the games, Geralt does not have memories of these characters.
That's kind of funny. It's kind of like serendipity.
Yeah, I love it.
But brilliant at the same time.
And it's like, I can't tell if it's brilliant or like just a stroke of luck that the writers happened on, but I'm really like seeing references being made in these games to these books is really interesting because they're framed in a way where the people who made the games know that the majority of their players would not get the references at all.
Right.
Which is kind of why I like the first game so much more, is because there's it's just a much better introduction to all the stuff that the second game kind of assumes you know.
Mm-hmm.
But oh, it's a trip. My heart is melting while going through this book. I'm having a lot more fun with it than I was the first book. I'm actually really, really enjoying this book.
There's definitely something special to be said about essentially, you know, the reference that nobody's supposed to get. Like it's kind of like artist's work for the artist, and they're just like I'm gonna put this here. It makes me happy. Maybe somebody will find it, but I don't really care if they do, because it's just like it's my own joke to me.
Right.
And then like, you know, somewhere down the line, some guy from Georgia is reading the book and realizes that it's a Polish saying that doesn't translate, but like, yeah, I don't know. It's funny.
I've just, usually when you have, like, references put in, they're kind of, I don't know, groan-worthy, but this thing with the Crimson Reavers, I mean, that, like,
That blew my mind because
your lack of, the player's lack of knowledge about these characters is like a shared experience with the characters.
Yeah, like, in hindsight, looking back on it, you were the most immersed person in that video
you
game.
You just didn't know it.
Oh man.
So, it's really clever and neat. I'm, like I said last week, I'm having a lot of fun doing this, and I'm glad I took it up, even though it means I pretty much have this weekend now to power through the entirety of The Witcher 2.
Good luck.
I know.
Yeah.
That is a game to get lost in, my friend. Be careful.
Yeah.
Well, I've done it before.
You may come out the other side with white hair and scars.
You might want to get through it fast so you can actually celebrate your independence from it on Saturday.
Yeah.
I've done it before, and I mean, I'm thinking it's going to be like a good 24 or 25 hours on my second playthrough, because now I know what to do. But I'm also going to do all these different choices, which means I'm going to end up in a totally different town and stuff. I can't wait to see how I was doing
the review series. It took me a lot longer. It's just I don't want to do this. Oh, I went side quest, and that's it, man. That's it. Then you're like you're sitting there in your underwear with Cheeto stains, and it's 2 a.m. in the morning. Okay, so.
Well, let's see. Careful. It looks like my first playthrough took 36 hours. That's what Steam's saying. So maybe on my second playthrough, I can whittle that down by 10, because I'll know what I'm doing, I hope. But it's the third game that I really have to worry about, because I'd like to get it done before SGC, and that's in 2 weeks. And yeah. you're already laughing.
Dude. No,
yeah,
no.
Good fucking luck
no.
is all
God
I gotta
damn
say.
It. Yeah. You know how long I told everyone a week and I'll have the review out. You know how long it took me? Mm-hmm. Took me over 3 weeks. Okay, 3 weeks to finish that game.
So basically, triple my expectation.
Yeah.
God damn it. Okay, fine. Well, I'm also going to be reading Blood of Elves at the same time, which is probably only going to increase the amount of hours I have to dedicate to this freaking Witcher.
I was just going to say, it sounds like a bad idea.
Reading the book?
Reading another book while you're taking on The Witcher 2.
No, I'm going to be... I want to read a book and play a game at the same time as I go through this trilogy.
Good luck.
I know. Thanks. I'm going to need it. It sounds really weird saying good luck when I'm basically playing video games and reading, like, schmaltzy pop fiction. But no, it's a lot. It's a lot to go through. Anyways, we're going to take a quick bathroom break, do some messages, and we will be right back.
The Bush.
Would you want to play the hottest, fastest, most advanced fighting game ever? Forget everything else and play Doom 2 on your PC. No other game gives you the incredible realism, the 360-degree smooth scrolling, and explosive action like Doom 2. It's easy to start playing, but it won't let you stop. Doom 2, it will consume you. Play solo against the computer, against the buddy by modem, or online in an awesome four-way deathmatch. Doom 2, playing at a PC software store near you.
We've already passed it, my friend. It's in the past. We have passed it. We are back at the TOVG podcast for our news half. We have 5 big, confusing stories that we have to get through in about 30 minutes because I have a date. I don't want to be late for a date after this podcast.
Very first power lunch.
Shut up. The very first one.
8 o'clock.
Okay, oh my god, you guys.
Okay, go.
We're already a week behind on this topic.
No, Ziggurat, go.
Destiny, the Taken King, has zigzagged on his DLC policy following a controversial interview with a guy named... Luke Smith, who is the creative director of the Taken King. So this is a DLC package for Destiny that was heavily marketed during E3. But during E3, Eurogamer got in touch with the creative director of it and started questioning him about their questionable pricing policies for this DLC. It's basically like an incredibly weird pricing scheme going on here where I think the expansion by itself is $40, but there's also a bundle that includes previous DLC for $60, which is like the same price as the base game.
It's actually all of that stuff on the page was in pounds, I believe.
Which means you have to like convert because Eurogamer, right. They can't use dollars.
Essentially, the pricing is the Taken King DLC by itself is full price new game, $60.
Wow.
And the
$60?
Yeah, and the Legendary Edition, which is €80, is clocking in around $125. And that includes Destiny, both the other expansions, and the Taken King, and some unique content to only that version.
This is where a lot of fans got upset, is that basically...
Rightfully so.
Okay, well, basically, to get all of the to get all of the new stuff they've released for this Taken King pack, you would have to rebuy a super expensive collector's edition of the game all over again to get... I don't know. I mean, three emotes. They also say three class-specific emotes, so I don't know if that means that
it's
there are three emotes in total, or if it's three times however many classes there are in the game.
It's stuff that does not affect the combat mechanics of the game. It's purely cosmetic and visual.
The emotes don't, the armor doesn't, but there's also some quote-unquote exotic class items that, I don't. It's kind of implied that they might be some sort of XP boosting items. I don't know if that means weapons or armor or something. It's really hard for me to talk about this because I'm not super into Destiny. I don't think are any of us here.
Not really.
Might be full of shit when talking about this, but this is still a fun and interesting story that involves a corporate bigwig looking like an asshole on the internet.
Which she definitely did look like an asshole because. In the interview, the Eurogamer person, I have to say, like, they like lost their cool a little bit into it, but they really tried to like coax a very like civil answer out of Luke Smith for the entire interview, and after a while they just dropped the facade and they were like, because they're essentially what they were trying to do was be like, okay, the Eurogamer guy was, he admitted, he's like, I'm a fan, I play Destiny a lot, like I'm, you know, have all the expansions and I'm really into it, like I want those emotes and the cosmetics and stuff from the Ultra Legendary Collector's Edition. However, I don't want to buy Destiny and the two previous expansions again, but that is currently the only way that you're allowing us to do that. He was like, eventually, like, Luke Smith kept, like, dodging, and then he was like, look, what I'm saying is, I'm willing to pay money for the emotes and cosmetics. Like, I'll just buy them. But I'm not going to rebuy a game I already own. And then Luke Smith was like, well, really, it's about value. And the guy was like, no, I don't want to buy a game I own is what I'm saying. Like, that's what you're saying. Like, us year one supporters who have supported this game that is essentially people are calling like way under content for what it was, you know, claiming to be.
Right.
You're like burning us by giving new players stuff that day one supporters can't have.
We have a very brief transcript cut out on the outline. So I have a proposal for you, Jimmy.
Okay.
What if we reenact this very, very quickly? You right. play the part of Eurogamer. I sure. play the part of Luke Smith. Great. Starting with, I get that it is big, but it is also this second block quote I have on okay. our outline.
All right. So Jimmy, am taking the place of the Eurogamer interviewer, and George is going to be Luke Smith. So, I get that it's big, but also the same price as the base game. That had four areas rather than one and more missions than the Taken King. So why is it the same price?
All I could do is answer that with the same thing I just gave you. We're really comfortable with the value we're giving players this autumn. I believe that once we begin to share more, players will be even more excited. And for existing players, it also comes with the Founders Pack with a new Sparrow shader and emblem.
Just not the emotes, though.
It doesn't, because they come with the Collector's Edition.
All right, final question on the prices.
Is it also the final question on the emotes?
I'm not going to mention them again. I can't get them.
But you can get them if you buy the Collector's Edition.
I'm not going to buy that game and the two DLCs all over again.
Okay, but first I want to poke at you on this a little bit.
Okay, poke at me?
You're feeling anxious because you want this exclusive content, but you don't know yet how much you want it. The notion of spending this money is making you anxious. I can see it.
I do want them. I would buy them.
And if I fired up a video right now and showed you the emotes, you would throw money at the screen.
Wait a minute, what?
What a douche.
Yeah, yeah, you guys can see why this may have gotten a little bit of backlash.
What? Yeah, yeah. So Luke Smith...
This guy's a professional, like, PR person?
No.
Well, he's a video game developer.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
If he was a PR person, he should be fired.
Yeah. I mean,
what he did was write a new blog post on the Destiny page saying that, wow, I really came off as an asshat, so what we're going to do is offer our veteran players something even better than the collector's edition for the new players. And guess what that turned out to be?
What is it?
The opportunity to buy this same extra content for $20.
Okay, see, I can hear the trepidation in your voice. What I will say, business practice, don't really agree with it. Prices, way too much. However, this is what was asked for. And the apology that Bungie gave is like, it's not a, we're sorry that you don't like it. It was literally like, yeah, the things that I said were shitty. I'm an asshole in that. Like, I'm sorry for that. It was a real, like, legit apology that was not, like, dancing around and trying to be like, I'm sorry that feelings are had. It was like, I'm actually sorry for being an asshole. And, despite the prices, this is what the Destiny people wanted. We can just buy...
Just saying, though, at the same time, it's 3 emotes, 3 armors, and 3 exotic class items for $20.
Agreed. Granted, but I feel like if that's going to be the main thing that we pick at, then we can go to fucking town on Team Fortress 2 and they're, you know... $8 of real money to get a pair of cosmetic shoes that only the scout can wear.
Well, at least the base game's free.
Right. That's, granted. But I'm just saying, the guy that Eurogamer was like, I just want to, just give me the opportunity to buy him. I'm a big enough fan, I'll buy him. And after, getting enough backlash, Destiny, the Bungie guys were just like, you know what? We'll just let him buy him.
I don't know. This strikes me more as a, well, they want to fucking buy it. Fucking put it out for $20 to see if they'll do it. Oh, God, they'll actually do it.
That's what he said. He said, if I fired a video right now and showed you the emotes, you would throw money at the screen. And then, 3 days later, basically, yeah.
I mean, it is a substantial amount less than $120.
It's $100 less than $120.
Well, yeah, it's $20 plus the expansion, so $80, right. Basically.
Oh my god, that's
a lot of money. Yeah. I wonder. I don't know what's
that's
in the expansion.
That's a lot of gas.
Yeah,
it's a lot of groceries.
Oh,
yeah, but
it's a lot of health insurance.
Here's the thing, though. I never like I said, business practices. I definitely disagree with that because it's just like Candy Crush style bullshit where it draws you in and doesn't care what your money looks like. It'll just take it regardless.
Aww.
However, I know that most of the people that I know who play TF2 and pour a lot of money into it, those guys are like engineers making a high level six-figure salaries, and they don't mind throwing away $1,000 on the game.
But that doesn't mean all of them are.
Right, but I'm saying that
the whales.
Yeah, the whales is what they're called.
I hate that term.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just saying, Bungie delivered on the thing that was asked for. If people would have been like, we should just get those for free for being day one supporters, maybe this would have gone different than allow us to buy them. But that's what they asked for. That's what they got.
It really sucks when you like a game, and then the company does stuff like this, and makes you question yourself. You're like, man.
Oh yeah, yeah. Much less respect for Bungie after this, especially just that interview. Like, you can apologize all you want, but that interview is forever. Like,
right. And you can't blame the whole company for one person. But still, though, right. Still, it's just like bad taste in your mouth.
Speaking of blaming things on other things,
okay.
Ooh, death segue.
Fortune.com came out with an article sourcing some Miyamoto quotes. I don't think this was an interview, Miyamoto. I'm sorry. Shut up. I don't think this was an interview feature because they only have two paragraphs worth of quotes in here, and they're not entirely being super duper specific where they came from. I mean, these might have been conversations with the guy at E3. These might be translations from some other Japanese publication. But basically, we have Miyamoto in quotes here, kind of trying to explain what the Wii U. Oh my god, trying to explain what the Wii U has failed at, and the primary target is tablets. He says, because tablets at the time were adding more and more functionality and becoming more and more prominent, this system and this approach, I'm talking about the Wii U, didn't mesh well with the period in which we released it. He goes on to say that his role in the NX development will be less than his role with the Wii. He's going to be focusing more on software instead of hardware, which that just reminds me, like, just a few years ago, weren't we talking about Miyamoto's?
Miyamoto's
eventual retirement? And he's, like, getting super involved now this year.
Yeah, the whole retirement thing was, a mistranslation. He's basically just stepping back. He's not stepping out. Which I get, because he's, like, 60.
Which is funny, because he's had, like, more of a present at this year's E3 than previous ones.
Yeah.
Which I guess makes sense, because he had a game to show this time with Star Fox. But it's still, like, this guy's in the news way more than he has been for the past, two or three years.
I mean, like, he also had his two original weird games to show last year, and also Mario Maker, so...
Oh, yeah, Mario Maker, that's right. So he has been working on technically two games that are about to come out.
Right, I mean, it looks like he is following through on the statement that he's working more on software, which is good, because, I mean, like, that's what we all know and love Miyamoto for. He's the fucking guy who made Mario and Zelda, like...
He's good at making mini games.
Yeah, so... I don't know. I'd like to. It's cool to see him more focused on games. I want to see what's coming out, especially because Star Fox was great. Mario Maker was great. Like, I'm excited to see those full releases. So I'm excited to see what else he's doing.
And of course, like, when he's blaming things for a failure of his company's product, he's not really going to want to pin the blame on himself. But I don't know. I mean, I feel like a collective groan was heard by a lot of fans upon reading this article.
Yeah, I don't agree.
Yeah, no.
I don't agree with the notion that the tablet controller is the Wii U's failure.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
It's not competing with tablets, even.
Yeah, it's...
It's a video game console.
I'm reading what you said you think was the, like, reasons for the Wii U's failure.
Oh, yeah,
You were completely right.
Yeah.
Like, bad name, George. Bad marketing, their own failure to fully capitalize on their own game libraries, and then the third party's failure to fully innovate with the Wii U's cool-ass controller.
Yeah.
The controller's specifically the, like, thing I'm thinking of is they asked Criterion, the guys who made Need for Speed, to work on an F-Zero game, and they said no, so they just stopped pursuing an F-Zero game.
Oh, God, I gotta read this. I missed that, and that breaks my heart.
I'll find an article and link it to
you. Oh, my God. Criterion, they did the Burnouts, too, right?
Yes, they did.
Holy shit, no way!
Yeah.
Don't cry.
Those are some of, like, the best racing games next to F-Zero.
And, like, I think it was, they were good to approach them. I just linked the article in the chat.
Oh, my God.
They were good to, like, approach them for that, but, like, when they said no because they were busy, they just stopped. Yeah. Like, why didn't they just move on to someone else?
Yep. I mean,
which makes sense, because their market for Wii U games would be like a pittance compared to their markets for any of the other two platforms.
Yeah. It's just...
Oh, God. So much potential.
Yeah. I mean, like, we've talked before about the potential of, like, a beat-em-up Platinum Captain Falcon game that wasn't necessarily F-Zero, but just, like, Captain Falcon being a badass, like, superhero kind of guy. We've talked about Criterion doing a fucking, like, legit F-Zero racer. Like,
shout-outs to my friend Wally the Legend and Strex. They made a great video about, like, a beat-em-up Captain Falcon game. Sorry.
No, I need... It's a good thing. I want that to exist, because it seems like a logical way to spin off the game, you know? Unlike Frontier Force. But, like, I don't know. It's just... Yeah, there's a lot of software that could have filled out the Wii U.
Even old software. DS games would have been perfect for the thing, and they only started that, like, 3 weeks ago.
That's the thing. Maybe I just don't understand video game development, but all GBA games should be filling out the 3DS, and the 3DS is doing fine, but there was something that I read where it was like, oh, it's really hard to port GBA games to 3DS. And I feel like that's a complete load of bullshit. But I don't know. But I feel like that's a complete load of bullshit.
I never understood.
They have an amazing backlog that they could just be putting out.
Right.
Like, that shouldn't be we're going to trickle one out a week. That should be we're going to port all of these, and they're going to be available in the first few months if you want them.
Right.
They don't even have to be, like, super duper... big expensive AAA games filling out this system's library. Like, I remember during E3 that story broke where the Metroid Prime director was talking about how it would take them like another 3 years or something to work up a Metroid Prime sequel, and it would have to be on the NX because they weren't able to gather the resources and the team in time for the Wii U. Meanwhile, I didn't even notice because I was playing the Wii port of the Metroid Prime collection, which had like two games I've never gotten around to playing. So it was like stuff like that. I could still be playing my Wii U if there was just more of that.
Right. I really need, like, mm-hmm. I mean, I still games need to dive into the Prime trilogy that I picked up on Wii U because, like, I've never beaten the first one and I've never played the third one. So, like, I still have Metroid games I could play at the same time, just like...
And the fun thing is, if you play the original GameCube versions, it really kind of doesn't even feel the same because you have Wiimote aiming. It's right. like a way different control scheme.
Yeah.
So it doesn't even like feel like as straight a port as what you would have gotten otherwise. So, okay, it's that they've also fully failed to capitalize on their own game libraries. Meanwhile, you have third parties failing to capitalize on the Wii U's cool-ass controller. Remember, did you guys play Zombie U?
No, I did not.
I remember it. I did not play it, but I've seen it played, and I did like how it played.
It's super duper cool because it uses the Wii U's cool-ass controller for a bunch of cool-ass gimmicks that make a whole lot of sense and add a whole lot to the game, and then nothing like it came out ever again.
Yeah, it's really weird that...
It was a launch title.
The launch titles were the ones that did the controller best. I mean, Nintendo Land did it fantastic.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was playing Nintendo Land like 3 nights ago.
Yeah, like the ghost game where like one person has to look at the gamepad and everyone else runs around on the main screen. Like, that's cool. And like, I don't know. There's a lot of potential for that controller, especially with a front-facing camera on it and just all kinds of neat stuff to do. Like, it's weird that nothing ever took full advantage of it. Even just in the way that, like, New Super Mario Bros. U had you able to play on the gamepad, like, exclusively if you wanted to. So you could essentially play through the entire Mario Bros.
The remote play feature is great.
Yeah, because you can play through the whole game while someone else is on a different channel on the TV, watching TV.
That's like a fairly common feature that a lot of games use, but you know what is cool as hell?
What is cool as hell?
The remote play. Like, I loved just cuddling up in bed and playing Smash.
Yeah.
It was so cozy.
And it's weird that Star Fox is coming out this, I guess, at the end of the Wii U's life cycle, if the NX is now being talked about as the next hardware, which I'm not.
See, that's a little bit scary. That's scary because me and George just bought Wii U, you know? It's for Smash and everything, and now it might be dying, you know? So now it's just a Smash system to me, and that kind
of
sucks.
I mean, you know what? I had a lot of fun with it while it was there. It reminded me a lot of my Dreamcast days.
I actually sincerely...
It flamed hard and burned away really fast.
I don't want the NX to be a new full console. I know that's a wishful thinking at this time, but I just want the Wii U to have like a double length life cycle so they can fill it out.
They could do it. They could do it so easily.
I'd be fine with it. There's no qualms.
There's no point of them putting out another underpowered console. I think at this point there's a lot of people who are educated in a way that they kind of want some of the graphics, you know. They kind of want things to be smooth, kind of like how the PS4 and Xbox is, where you can multitask while you're playing games and stuff like that. Like, the Wii U is such an older console, and plus, it, like you guys were saying before, there's no backwards compatibility with, you know, some of the old games on the shop. So,
which makes no sense because there's native backwards compatibility with the Wii built into the hardware of this thing, which means there's also native backwards compatibility with the GameCube built into this thing.
Yeah, and okay, so not to cut you off and not to cut into our time for other topics that we have, but I want to pose like a quick question right now. Then, would you guys be okay with, or would you guys be like angry at or against or uneasy if the NX was actually not a new console but was essentially a plug to your Wii U, like, piece of boost the hardware? So it's like your Wii U gets a better processor, better graphics, and maybe has like a dedicated connectivity with your 3DS, and they release games that have like a cross-buy that have features that can be played on both.
Like a new Wii U? Like new 3DS?
Essentially,
like a Sega 32X.
Yeah, essentially, right. All it is,
that would be,
is like a boosting type of box that you plug into the Wii U and adds.
Marketing is going to be hectic for that, I think.
I'd be okay with that, but like they're never going to do it because they already failed like differentiating the Wii U from the Wii.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they would, this would be another thing they'd have to differentiate.
But just think that they can call it the Wii Unity.
Oh, it unites all the systems together.
Absolutely not.
What if they sold a standalone NX that was the Wii U plus the extra expansion box, or like gave an NX expansion that you could turn your Wii U into an NX?
Actually,
it's still confusing.
That sounds to me like a good opportunity to make some kids sad at Christmas when they get the expansion because their parents were stupid.
And nothing else.
Like, they don't have the Wii U, so they just have a useless, like, plug.
That's actually interesting, though, that you call it an expansion, because what if that, like, what does the X stand for? Nintendo...
Cross.
Cross.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nintendo Cross.
Oh. It is
that's
Japanese.
That's what X means in Japan. It's cross.
So, yeah. 3DS Cross Wii U?
Well, that was my thought.
It seems like, logical, right?
Monster Hunter Cross.
Or like handheld meets console gaming.
I don't know, man. It's just like, I love my Splatoon box, but I don't want to remember
August
it as yet. That.
I can't play Splatoon.
Like, I don't want to remember it just as that. I don't want to like leave it behind already. Is this what Dreamcast people felt like when Dreamcast died?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, we did.
Because the Dreamcast was so fun up until 2002, and then it just stopped.
I feel
Power Stone, Shemu.
Within 2002, like literally December 31st, 2001 was the last day I had fun with my Dreamcast.
I feel like we're a whole bunch of self-aware dinosaurs staring at the meteor.
Yeah. Just waiting.
And then we're saying, we've been here before. Remember the last generation of meteors?
There's just nothing we can do. And we're just like, well, here comes the NX.
Holds Wii U very tightly as the meteor just smashes into our face. Yeah.
Yep. In the arms of an angel blaring.
No! Now I have to think of sad puppies. So instead, I'll think of Nolan North accidentally leaking Uncharted 5.
The Last
of Us. The Last of Us 2.
Yep.
If you didn't think a sequel to The Last of Us was coming, you haven't been paying attention.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, I mean, they try to end... I don't know, how many of us have beat The Last of Us?
I haven't done it, I don't care.
Twice.
Okay. Well, everyone likes to talk up about how conclusive the ending is, but I was really surprised that when I actually finished it, it wasn't super conclusive. Or at least it like wasn't as conclusive as they made it out to be. A lot of fans made it sound like everyone would die. Spoilers, everyone doesn't actually die.
I feel like from a character standpoint, their stories are done, but like the world of The Last of Us is very, very like it's conducive for like anthology storytelling.
That doesn't have
like,
to do with
there
the
are
same
more
case.
Stories
like,
in that world.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, like
yeah,
like
yeah.
Walking
like,
Dead
there
style.
Are, yeah, exactly.
And I really wish where, there were like, more franchises like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like Fallout. Mm-hmm. Does it really
oh,
well.
Oh god, Fallout is so good about that. Because you can pick up any Fallout and know what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a vault guy.
And if you're aware of like the series as a whole, you see little things that are like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, like all games should be like that.
Yeah, I would really like I mean like okay, sue me for fucking saying this because it's like super hypocritical, uh-oh. But I would like a Metroid like that. I feel like if they picked up on the bounty hunter of some other kind and not the fucking Federation that no one gives a shit about.
Yo,
what?
Real talk?
Yeah.
A Weevil game? Fuck yeah.
Is he from Hunters?
He's one of the Hunters. Like,
I remember
Weevil's
looking
story,
at all their designs and they all looked fucking cool.
Like, Weevil's story is that he is a space pirate who got fucked up in Super Metroid, so he fucking hates Samus.
Okay.
And he's like a cyborg.
Uh-huh.
That'd be a fucking great game. Like, that would be great. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't even have to do with Metroids. It could just be same universe, different place. Those kind of games, those, like, it takes place in something that you're familiar with, but we don't have to make it anything like the game you know. Like, that's...
Yo, yeah. that one dead body you see before Kraid's lair in Super Metroid, what's his story?
Oh, Crocomire?
In Super Metroid, right before Kraid's lair, there's just a dead guy on the floor.
Really?
Like, yeah.
I think I remember
what's his
this.
Story? What's his deal? It's not acknowledged in any way. You just see it and you're like, oh.
I like the type
that's
of...
That's a dead guy.
Oh my god.
I like the type of if stuff you for you can see that at the end that he dies in that correct spot, and then you see like Samus come up like at the end of the game. That would be so awesome.
And the last cutscene is like
that's so
the body
fanservice-y.
Like pans out and then Samus just walks by and doesn't notice it.
Right.
Also, and then just credits roll.
I just want to point out, if you fucking... Oh yeah, there is a dead guy right there. What the fuck are you doing there? If you type in Super Metroid and then just the letter D, or the top two options, one of them is Super Metroid dead guy before Kraid.
What's the other one? Right?
Download. Oh, I don't know what I was thinking. I'm really wondering how we got here from Nolan North accidentally blurting out during a Q&A panel.
Parallel games that take place in the same universe but don't have anything to do with the other game.
I.e. The Last of Us 2,
which is what Nolan North leaked in an interview.
Because, I mean, I can't really, like, get into it without spoiling, but, I mean, it could go either way, really.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see.
I hope that's called, like, The Last Two of Us, and it's like Left 4 Dead, but with like a
The Last Two of Us.
Oh gosh. Oh gosh.
The second to Last of Us.
The last among the there's Jimmy, you're good at puns.
I tried already. I was the first one on top of that.
Yeah.
Just the two of us.
Just the two of us. Alright, it's over.
Okay, I feel good about moving on now. Yeah. We've officially exhausted what was there.
Yeah.
So, this is another story, much like the Destiny thing, that's really super complicated when you start to look into it.
Yeah.
But still a lot of people are panicking over it.
Give them the short version, because we're running.
Yeah, I got my date.
Yeah.
The Australian government has adopted a new classification model that has seen them effectively banning 220 games in 4 months. You can compare that to the 50 games that have been refused classification between the past like 20 years. Which the reason why I say this is a lot more complicated and maybe almost like inconsequential when you look at the fine print of the thing is that this ABC news article, that's the Australian ABC, that I was primarily sourcing this quip from, has their first sentence saying that titles such as Douchebag Beach Club, Drunk Driver, and Hobo Simulator have been refused classification. And I immediately looked up those games and saw that they were like free Flash games. Or like free on the App Store, like stuff that when you have a game refused classification in Australia, you're technically allowed to possess it. It's almost like a weird drug law. You're allowed to possess it, but not to sell it or advertising it, which also means that you're allowed to give it away, which means that like if it's a free Flash game, then like what effectively are they banning it from? If it's like on the internet only, then it's not exactly, like, subject to the rules of the Australian government. Like, it's easy enough to bypass this stuff, and always has been.
Yeah.
You can always import games if you're Australian, or buy them through an international store on the internet, or just pirate them, which, if you're playing Hotline Miami 2, is the officially sanctioned method of doing it from the developer. He gives you your blessing to pirate it if you live in Australia. But anyways, what's going on here is that they are adopting this another really complicated, weird, fishy thing called the AIRC, which is the International Age Rating Coalition. And what this is basically a global pilot program that a lot of countries are adopting, which also includes the USA, as well as the UK, Canada, Brazil, and much of Europe, that isn't necessarily set out to replace the regional rating standards of any of those places, but as like a kind of unified, standardized tool to just like slap on a website next to a free Flash game or something. I don't even really know like how these ratings are enforced, because if these stupid free Flash games are getting rated, then like whose authority is it to apply those ratings and enforce them? Meanwhile, who's actually rating stupid free Flash games? As it turns out, users can do it. The tool is designed so that developers fill out a piece of paperwork first, that they then submit to a government, and that they apply a rating to, and then once that rating's on the internet, users can actually alter it from there. And what's happening here is that the Australian Classification Board is going through such a vast amount of games compared to what they were going through last year that I feel like a lot of these papers are just showing up on their desks. They're skimming through them and either giving like a check mark or an X. I can't imagine why the developers of stupid free schlocky Flash games would be seeking approval for sales and advertising in the Commonwealth of Australia. That paperwork is still showing up on their desks. Another weird thing about this story is that they're going through more games than they were before. They're banning more games than they were before. But at the same time, it's still the same percentage of the whole because they're just increasing the total volume of games they're going through. Because I guess now they're just sifting through the paperwork rather than reviewing them on an individual case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
One thing is that the classification board was formerly charging developers in Australia or who were releasing in Australia a $1,600 fee. Now there is no fee because I guess the developer just gives them a short piece of paper instead.
This all seems like a lot of nothing.
It's weird. And it may be a lot of nothing, or it may just be like business as usual, but being processed with an entirely different method.
Like, by that, what I mean is, like, this seems like the government equivalent of, like, busy work. Like, let's change a whole bunch of things, but in the end it really doesn't change much of anything kind of deal. You know what I'm saying?
And I don't really know how much it would change, like, the IARC, like, do they use different ratings than the regional standards? Like,
I don't fucking know, dude.
Is this supposed to obsolete the ESRB or something?
It's just like it seems really asinine. Like, why? They're not like censoring. They're not like preventing it from being like given out. I suppose they are being prevented from being sold, but like, I don't know. Is it just like this thing where like games are continuing to be misunderstood? Is it just like regular artistic medium, like anything else? Like, can
this that is business as usual in Australia,
right? But it just seems so like, and this is an argument I use a lot because it's such an easy thing to like put into perspective. Like, can they sell porn in Australia? I'm assuming yes.
There are ridiculous restrictions on porn in Australia.
Really?
Like,
careful though.
You have to have very large breasts as
a
woman.
Nope, that is not true. I got in a lot of trouble in journalism school over this particular story because I wrote a paper about it, and the teacher was like, "I looked this up, and it literally exists nowhere."
Huh?
Like it that rule
you
showed up.
You and I both
on,
got tricked.
We did. It showed up and that was also like, what, 5-6 years ago? It showed up basically only on the website of some offshoot feminist political party in Australia and nowhere else. And a lot of times when you see really weird stories like that sound too weird to be true and don't really show up on like mainstream news sources, that's why. Is because it's like, it may be in this case like a culture jamming attempt by a group with a political cause point to prove.
Well, I only like took it at face value just now because I know that Europe, England, somewhere specifically in that continent. I don't know the specific area, so I'm not gonna like say with like certainty. But I know they just had a big like porn reform kind of thing.
Oh yeah, that was Britain.
Britain had one recently. A filter, which I think also amounted out to be a really weird story that wasn't exactly what it appeared to be on the surface.
Well, because I heard you could not produce any sort of pornography that had very specific things that were like like, yeah, big, more extreme things just to be general, and people were protesting it with hilariously, awkwardly sexual protests. That's where I heard
about
the story.
Oh, wait, I think...
There was,
yeah,
like,
they,
one,
like,
of, one of the things... Was this one of the things that involved, like, sitting and faces? Yeah, that was the one.
I don't know about that case in particular, but Australia having a, like, mandatory boob size standard...
Well,
yeah, that's totally bullshit. I had to...
That's bullshit, yeah. But do they have other stuff that's, like, very prohibitive on porn? Because then that would put this, like, banning games that are, like, slightly, like... douchebag beach club, really, like, that's like in like insulting enough to get banned or offensive enough to get banned. Like, there must be some pretty strict laws if it's just like across the board.
When I looked it up, I was surprised. It's basically like a mean-spirited parody of Jersey Shore, where you play as this like bronze douchebag who walks into a club and bees mean to everybody. It's like a parody flash game that was on Kongregate. And it's also free on the App Store.
Great.
And it's like, those things, they aren't really part of the industry. Like, there was no violence, as far as I could tell. There was no nudity. There were just people with buff chests wearing swimsuits and having glasses and making a really, really easy attempt at saying, ho, Jersey Shore is so stupid, isn't it, guys?
Yeah.
I'm really surprised... The stuff they are technically quote unquote banning. The reason I put it in quotes is because it wasn't being sold in the first place. The other reason is because it really just feels like this paperwork is showing up on their desk and they're just going through the motions. Because like 220 in the past 4 months, how else does that happen?
It's busy work. It's meaningless.
Anyways.
Busy work. That's all I got. We said enough. The people
is there,
understand.
Anything else we need to go over before we hang up and move on?
I think we're
about ready to wrap up.
This podcast came out Monday because we were out for 4th of July and I had no time to edit it. Because I'm literally leaving for my 4th of July out of town trip in like an hour. So.
Oh.
There's no time for people to, unless these guys upgrade it to like 300 meg upload speed, I'm not going to get these files in time to, so sorry for the late podcast.
Well, I mean,
hope you enjoy the on time podcast this week. Go see us at SGC next week.
Though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh God, that's right. It's 2 weeks in the future and you're talking 2 weeks in the future.
Yep.
I have to get ready. I have to play me some Witchers. Yeah. That's what I'm going to be doing during 4th of July. Everyone's going to be having fun, having a barbecue with their family. I'm going to be in a room by myself in the dark playing The Witcher.
Oh, I know what I have one thing to say about before we fucking end it. Fuck you, Nintendo, for putting Splatfest on fucking July 4th. Thanks a lot.
Oh, yeah,
that seems weird. Thank you for that. I love
you,
Nintendo, but goddamn, that was the dumbest fucking thing. Put the Japan one on July 4th. Put the EU one on July 4th. Not the fucking North American one. Now the only people going to be playing Splatoon for Splatfest on July 4th are all the Canadians. So whoever, like, I feel like a war is being fought for me by another country.
They're going to look at this. They're going to look at this and feel like, oh, well, America doesn't really care.
Yeah.
Like,
yes, that's true. They're going to be like, America doesn't even want to play Splatfest. I want to do that. I'm going to be up in the woods next to a lake. I can't do that.
You could have your own Splatfest.
Throw water balloons at people and pretend I'm having fun. All right. Angry rant over.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.